This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. November is American Indian Heritage Month in North Carolina. Robeson County is home to many people in the Lumbee Nation. It's the largest tribe east of the Mississippi River. Through most of the 20th century, the county's economy depended largely on manufacturing. But in the late 90s, Robeson County lost over 40% of its manufacturing jobs.
You know, it had a great impact on their lives. A lot of people, their homes, you know, like this home right over here, they were built from working in factories. So, you know, and before then, you just lived in a little wood house, you know. But when they got the factory jobs, they were making the money. They could afford to build homes and have nice homes and stuff. So it made a difference in their lives and their community.
That is part of a new documentary project by students and faculty at the University of North Carolina, Pembroke. It takes a look at the effect on the Lumbee community in Robeson County. Michelle Fazio is a professor of English and Working Class Studies at UNC Pembroke, and she is co-producer of the documentary film Voices of the Lumbee and joins us now. Good to have you on the program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Alexis Locklear is a student at UNC Pembroke who has worked on the film Voices of the Lumbee. Hello, Alexis.
Hi.
Michelle, let me talk with you about this film. Tell me how it got started.
It got started actually out of a project I was conducting in my composition and literature classes. It's a service learning project exploring the work histories of the Lumbee elders. And I was working with the Lumbee tribe. The director of elder services and I conducted a research study with my students. And we found that there was a really compelling narrative about the loss of jobs and how it impacted the lives of elders living in the community. And a colleague of mine, Dr. Jason Hutchins, assistant professor of mass communication and chair of the department, talked to me about my project and said this was a compelling narrative to put to film. So he and I have been working for the past 2 years, putting this all together with students and having an amazing time.
Tell us a little bit about that story, because if we think about sort of manufacturing jobs, that is still relatively recent, and native cultures and populations, of course, have been here a long time. So how, when did this industry get started, and what effect did that have, the introduction of industry in that part of North Carolina?
The film really delves into the shift from farming to from agriculture to industry. And I think that shift started happening around the 50s after World War II. And we had a lot of the smaller farms not being able to survive with agribusiness coming into play and the larger farms taking over. So a lot of the elders talked about moving into the factories. Some of them chose to get an education at Pembroke State College, which it was named at the time. Others went into the factories and learned skills and earned really well-paying jobs in those industries.
How did it change the community down there?
Well, like the soundbite just explained, people had a better quality of life. They had a fierce work ethic, that they really enjoyed their jobs. I had elders explain to me that they didn't miss a day's work, and they took such pride in what they did. And it was so devastating when these jobs left. And I think it was, you know, roughly around 1995 when things started changing. And up until 2012, industry is still leaving. So approximately 70 manufacturers left and displaced over 10,000 people.
Alexis, tell us your experience about growing up in Robeson County.
I've grown up in Robeson County, and with it being a poor county in general, it was kind of hard, and I also came from a single-parent home. So when I was growing up, my mom was working two jobs. But her husband, I watched him go from working at Fleetwood, which was a local factory here that put out mobile homes. He worked there for 15, 16 years, and then all of a sudden the plant shut down, and he could not find a job for about 2 years and had to move all the way to Florida in order to find a job that he could qualify for. He tried other places, but he was overqualified for the job, so he had to go all the way to Florida. I've watched many people just suffer from the economic downfall that we faced, you know, and it was hard for us to pick back up. Our farming went down. The factories went down. People lost their jobs, and they had to find another way of or means of income, which usually led to them moving out of Robeson County. And those who stayed either became teachers or social workers or things like that, or even in the fast food industry, they had to go to jobs like that because there was no other way of bringing income into the home.
What did your mother do?
My mom was a secretary or is a secretary at UNC Pembroke, and she also worked as a transcriber for Scotland County Memorial Hospital. So during the week, she would work 8 to 5 at the job at the university, and then in the evenings, she would go to the hospital and would transcribe, And even on the weekends, she would do that. So as a kid growing up in something like this, I raised myself. A lot of the kids from my generation are used to surviving on their own because their parents were out trying to make a means of putting food on the table, of putting clothes on our backs and roofs over our heads. And it was hard for all of us. But as a community, as the Lumbee community, we're so strong in our community in how we support each other that we tend to turn to each other. And if she was away, I could go stay with my friends, or my friends came over, and we found a way to balance it out.
You know, it's interesting, Michelle, to think about this going from farming to industry, really in the course of about 50 years, and then the industry collapsed all in about 50 years. But talk about what happened when you essentially leave the farm. That rural life may not have provided as much income as the factories, but it was a kind of a self, you know, that you were able to sustain yourself, I assume. That's gone. Could people actually go back to that?
The elders that I interviewed spoke in depth about the kind of difficulties they had and the incredible responsibilities in raising animals on a farm and tending the crops. They talked about how hard the labor was, how physically challenging it was. I remember one woman explained how her hands used to bleed when she picked cotton and how difficult it was to sucker tobacco. I think I'm saying that right. I'm not from here, so I think it's suckering tobacco. So I think they did learn a lot of skills because they talked about when they were in the factories having to keep up with quotas and the assembly line. It was very backbreaking work in both contexts, and they were very aware. So I think in some regards, the farming background helped them become these really strong workers. But then I think some of them, like I said, were not able to utilize those skills outside of the industries once they left. So like taking on service jobs, they were overqualified. It was low pay. So I'm not sure if people did go back to farming, but I know some of these elders were forced into retirement and they personally have gardens at home. So I don't know anything more than that.
I'm going to ask Alexis in just a second her personal view of this, having grown up in the county. But as somebody who's taken a look at the big picture, Alexis talked about the support networks that people had. And, of course, in rural communities, you expect that kind of thing. Did working in factories dissolve or in any way put stress on those social networks that developed earlier in a rural farming community?
You know, one of the things that came out of this project was how some people had to leave to find a job. And there was one elder I interviewed who had to move to Detroit, and he worked at General Motors for 30 plus years. And he found it was very detrimental that he had to leave his home community. And he didn't really feel back, you know, back in like a sense of belonging when he returned. So he spoke a lot of the pressures to perform in those jobs and the downsizing and the threat of being laid off, having to perform all the time. So I think that did do some harm in terms of that sense of who he is and having to move back to Robeson County, finding it a very different place, you know, seeing all these factories that are like ghostly specters, you know, littering the landscape. But then you see these really beautiful images of fields of tobacco and wildflowers and cotton. So there's an interesting juxtaposition of 20th century.
Yeah, that transition. And Alexis, obviously you didn't live through that whole period, but when you listen to parents and grandparents talk about the way things were and how they changed, I mean, do they ever get nostalgic for a time before the factories were there?
Yes, sir. They always look at you or the younger generation and say, you know, you don't know what real hard work is. Because my grandmother, she often sits around and she talks about how she went out into the field and she picked the cucumbers and she sat around with her mother and her grandmother and they picked peas. It was a sense of family. That's how you spent your family time. Instead of going to school, you worked out in the farm. You know, a lot of these people didn't have education, but they know how to use their hands. My grandmother is 82 years old, and she still has her own garden in her backyard that she tends to every day. And I feel that by keeping that in her life, it's kept her young. Even though that she is older, she's still able to get out there. And people, even though that farming isn't a big deal for us anymore, they still find a way to keep it a part of their daily life because it's how they grew up, it's what they know. And in some families, they are teaching our generation, and in other families, it's kind of dwindling away because there's not a necessity for it anymore. But it is still a tradition. It's still a way of how we get together, just like my mom and my grandmother and I during Thanksgiving, we get the collards together out of the field and we bring them in. And my grandmother sits around and she tells us how to cut everything and put it into the pots. And it's just a time to come together and spend time together. Instead of becoming a work thing, instead of it being a work thing anymore, it's more of family time and sharing our heritage together in our cultures.
So there are still some of those things going on, but they're certainly not contributing to the overall economic development. And statistically, that part of the state, you know, is 13% unemployment. We see crime rates. We see, graduation rates low, crime rates high. Michelle, let me start with you. One of the things I know you wanted to tackle in this film is some of the negative perceptions of Robeson County. Tell us more about that. First of all, what the perception is, and then what you found living down there and working down there.
The perception of Robeson County has been a one-dimensional narrative long before I came to North Carolina 4 years ago. It's the largest county in North Carolina, the poorest county, and most of the headlines depict the area as violent, crime-ridden, full of drugs and homelessness. And what I found when I arrived at UNCP was a really vibrant community of people coming together, working together for social change, trying to improve community relations. And I found the Lumbee elders that I've spoken to and members of the tribal council that I've been working with, you know, really lovely people. They want to connect with university officials. They're excited about this documentary and these kinds of surface learning projects that we've been working on. So I think there are so many positive things in terms of community building that's going on. So it's a way to rethink the future of Robeson County, not to keep putting it in the past and looking at it in this one-dimensional way, but there's multiple intersecting realities happening, and I think it's about positive change and progress.
Yeah, because the statistics are accurate, but what you're saying is it's not the whole story down there. Alexis, how do you take that? I mean, as you go, you know, if you tell somebody you're from Robeson County, do you sort of brace yourself for that look you're going to get?
I do, because it's natural. It's something that you get used to. But I also try to present myself in a friendly and exciting way so that they look at me and say, well, maybe not everyone is like that. And coming from the university, a lot of kids come in and they're afraid to even approach the locals because of the horror stories that people tend to tell, and that's not who we are. We're very inviting and warm people. We just have a bad connotation from the statistics and from some of the negative people in our community, but that's not who we are as a whole. And it's kind of hard to portray that whenever people just approach you with one set mindset. But I work, and others that I know work, to break the barriers and show people that we are inviting and that you don't have to listen to the statistics, that we are people set aside from numbers.
Tell us about some of the projects that are going on down there to help turn things around. Let me stay with you, Alexis.
Different things we're bringing. We're expanding the college to bring more students in. We're actually, we used to be a dry county, but now we've gotten into the selling of alcohol just to appeal to more outsiders. We also had our first hotel built here in Pembroke. They've been talking about building some townhomes, just building more houses for people to live in, and also a movie theater, trying to just attract some more revenue, some more visitors. And our Lumbee tribe actually gets money that builds homes for our elders, and they go into the homes and they fix things. So we're building more to make our area more financially stable, more economically stable, so that by building these things, we're attracting more people to come in and build the revenue up. And I feel that we're making great strides in that area.
Michelle, you worked with and you filmed a group of women who had all worked at the Converse factory there. Tell us about that experience.
Yeah, they worked for 20, 25 years side by side. And the interesting thing, when my students and I went into the elder centers where we interviewed them, it didn't occur to me that they had worked side by side. It was only after I read the transcripts that I realized the people that were showing us how to quilt, these women's hands that were doing intricate stitches of the Lumbee regalias, just worked. I learned that they worked side by side on the Converse assembly line. Who sewed the shoes? Who put the shoes into the boxes? Who had injuries? And it was really amazing to put the pieces of the puzzle together. And yet they hadn't told us. So I was there. I go back and see the elders. It's been, 2 years, and it's it's about building relationships. So to find out now, like all these other stories that they kept back from the interviews, because now that we've asked the questions, they want to keep talking. But, you know, the other thing I wanted to add, culturally, there's a lot of things happening in Robeson County that are creating social change. There's a series called Peace in the Park, and it brings together musicians and arts and crafts vendors. It's a series that's offered in the fall and the spring, and it's on Thursday nights. And the community comes together, the campus community and the local community, and we hear amazing musicians and really, you know, see artists at work. And we also have the Lumbee powwows that go on throughout the year. And there's also Lumbee Homecoming. So there's lots of cultural events that keep the community vibrant and thriving and bring attention to Robeson County in a positive light.
And Alexis, I understand that you were working on this film actually inspired you to learn more about your own heritage, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I knew a little bit about us, but I didn't know completely where we came from and then how we contributed to what we are today. And I joined it because before I joined the project, I was thinking of running for Miss Lumbee, which is a local pageant that we have at Lumbee Homecoming, and I just thought it would be a great way to learn more, and I did. I learned that there are people outside of Robeson County that were affected by this, but that moved away, but they also took Pembroke and the Lumbee traditions with them and created their own Lumbee land, if you could say, outside of Robeson County. They didn't forget about who they were. And it also inspired me to make my own documentary, which is Native American, a documentary about Native American dancing, because I feel that a lot of people have a stereotypical Native American in their mind from what they've seen from television, but we're not like that. We are spiritual individuals, and we take our dancing very seriously, and we're impacted. We connect community and socially, and by joining this documentary with Dr. Fozzie and Dr. Hutchins, it just opened my eyes to so many different levels that the Lumbee exists on.
Well, I want to thank you both for being on the program. Alexis Locklear, a student at UNC Pembroke who worked on the film Voices of the Lumbee. And for more information on the film, you can go to voicesofthelumbee.com. Michelle Fazio is a professor of English and working class studies at the University of North Carolina, Pembroke, co-producer of the documentary film Voices of the Lumbee. Thank you both for being on the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to The State of Things. Our website is stateofthings.org, and this is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.